I surpassed all the impediments, and it's because I was at the top, you know, kids, family, white picket fence, dog, car, good job, blah, 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 blah. But I was still unhappy. And that was the trigger.
Welcome to The Max, a podcast for leaders and entrepreneurs. Hosted by Viefma Krammer.
Hi there. This is episode number 18 of The Max podcast. I have a very interesting guest. I made this one with care and love. And the one thing I would like you to do is subscribe to my channel. I will be very grateful if you do. But with no further ado, let's start the interview.
Hi, Anderson.
Hello.
I want to thank you for joining me on my podcast, Meet the Max. And you wrote a few books. One of your books or manuals is A Guide for Purpose and an Anxiety-Free Life in the 21st Century, inspired by the Stoic philosophy. And we just talked about it a little bit, about the reason why you wrote this manual. So can you repeat that, please?
No, that was a one-time thing. Sorry, no repetition. Before I tell you about the book, I think it will help if I take 60 seconds to paint my picture and then explain how I ended up in Stoicism and why this book came to be. So I'm an accountant by trade.
Okay.
I am a CPA. I got out of school. I crushed my grades in school. I got my CPA. CPA in North America is, it's that chartered accountant. I think in Europe, that's what you guys have. I got the exec level job, six-figure salary, bing, bang, boom. In Canada, we're like an American state, so we chase after the American dream, right? And I got there, and I took inventory of my life. And I realized that inside, I felt exactly the same. Same consternations I had from even when I was a teenager. You know, some of those feelings from when I was a teenager was still lingering. I was still kind of doing without thinking. And I went on my own journey of re-education. End result, I kind of changed my own life. This is going back about 10 years now.
Okay.
And in the past 5 years, what's happened is, this has been very interesting, more and more people started gravitating towards me in my inner circle for advice, because they knew I was pursuing this thing called Stoicism. Like, what would they do?
Yeah.
And then from there, it expanded to online message groups. It expanded to some mentorship. And then came Your User's Manual, which is my first book.
Okay.
And, those of you who people who have read my books will know the first book does not have volume one written on it, but the consecutive ones have volume two, volume three. The reason is when I wrote that book, it was supposed to be a one-time thing. It was supposed to be a one-off. However, there's such an appetite for the stuff out there.
Yeah.
I just kept writing. And so to answer your question, to summarize it all, I wrote the book for people like me who don't have an academic, philosophical, or psychology background that wants to understand themselves a little better in layman terms.
Yeah. Okay. That's good, because I wanted to ask you that question, because which changes in your life did you experience when you started to practice Stoicism? And you told us a little bit, but were there specific things happening in your life? Because, that's maybe the reason why you really started to read Stoicism, about Stoicism.
Absolutely, cause and consequence, right? So what happened in my life? Here's the interesting thing. Nothing. I actually succeeded and surpassed every measure that I was given by society to tell me, this is what you have to do to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I surpassed all the impediments, and it's because I was at the top, kids, family, white picket fence, dog, car, good job, blah, 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 blah. But I was still unhappy. And that was the trigger.
Yeah. But there are all kinds of places where you can find a little bit more happiness or more wisdom. But your choice was to follow the path a little bit into the Stoic philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
So why specifically the Stoic philosophy?
Great question. So when I started this re-education of mine, my natural, where's the first place anyone looks? Spirituality, religion. Yep. So I turned to religion and I didn't find the answers I wanted. Okay. I'm a very pragmatic person. I'm a very touchy-feely. I'm agnostic, right? I'm not atheist. I don't not believe in anything. But I also recognize that there's a lot I don't understand. Yep. So religion didn't fill the gap. And I started reading philosophy. You know, René Descartes really hit a chord with me. Another one, Schopenhauer, I keep close to heart as you know, complex and convoluted as his text gets sometimes. But again, when I started reading very randomly, I ended up with this book called Letters from a Stoic by Seneca to Lucilius. And I say randomly because it was a late night shopping spree on Amazon. Like I wasn't even looking for it. It just ended up in my cart. And you know what? I when I read it, it just, how can I explain it? I'm reading this text that's 2,500 years old.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, huh? Yeah.
And it sounds just like my worries and my concerns. So that's when something clicked in my brain and said, hold on a minute. Why do they have the same problems I do 2,500 millennia apart? It's because the human condition hasn't changed. And that's where Stoicism and I began this beautiful relationship. Now, I do want to be clear. I'm a Stoic practitioner. I'm not a Stoic, right? I do a lot of Tibetan Buddhism also is a big part of my philosophy. But Stoicism has really resonated with me. And I think the same reason why it's resonated with me, it's why it's finding a resurgence today. It makes sense with our current zeitgeist, if I may say. It makes sense with our current societal line of thinking, I guess, for not everybody, but for a good majority, it would seem, at least with the work I put out there.
True. Well, it really got you. And I read that you feel it's a duty to share this with the world. And you say, well, because it's changed you, and maybe, or your, we're pretty sure that it can change many lives for the better. And do you have any examples apart from your own of people who changed for the good?
Sure, plenty. I'll use two examples. One from my inner circle, my wife and my kids, because they kind of embarked on this journey de facto, right? For the parents out there, you know what I'm talking about. You know, love them or hate them, whatever your relationship with your kids, they emulate you, right? And my wife too, she embarked on this. So a big change in our home, I can definitely pinpoint empirical examples of how we're more tolerant with each other, right? My two older kids are teenagers, so it's coming in really handy right now. We're able to communicate better. This is an impact that's very visible to me and people who are external to us that see our family kind of operate and function. It does seem weird the way we talk to each other because we're very, very honest. And honesty is like a bad thing these days almost. You know what I mean? So I guess that's a big change on our end. If I can use an example of a mentee, because I also mentor people who help them in their lives. Every week, there's a story of someone surviving abuse, whether physical, drug, alcohol, people who are overcoming problems at school, problems with parents. I see the tangible impact that Stoicism is having on people. And you know, this is going to be a short interview, but for some of your listeners who are interested in it, they'll see the Stoic philosophy is a practical one that is as simple as it can be. It's been boiled down to the purest form of human thought. And that's why I think it helps people kind of shift gears.
You just mentioned that not only Stoic philosophy really interests you, but also the meditation. Parts. So what kind of meditation do you do?
All right. So meditation, when we hear meditation nowadays, we think of the Zen meditation, right? The Buddhist meditation, quiet contemplation. When us Stoics refer to meditation, we refer to journals. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the most disciplined form of meditation I do is my journal. I never leave my house without my pocket journal. Mm-hmm. I use it too compulsively, maybe, because I use it for all my decisions.
Oh, really?
But I find, this is my personal choice, I find I feel better at the end of the day if I kind of, you know, if I can make 2/3 of my daily decisions, but I feel good about those 2/3 of my decisions instead of rushing through every decision I have to make. This has come in handy at home, at work, you know. So one thing Stoicism teaches you is that every moment is precious and every moment is important. So every decision I take has to have 100% of my attention. Otherwise, why bother doing it?
Yeah, true.
And so journal, number one. Now, the Zen meditation, it's very, very difficult. Do you meditate yourself?
Well, I try to meditate once in a while, but I'm more of a journal type.
Right.
I like to write things down, and it works with me. It's a kind of meditation. It's a moment to take the breath and to really think about things that happened and are going to happen. So that's more of my way.
And that's great. And you know, if you think about the word meditation, it implies reflection. Mm. And so whether you're reflecting on paper or in your mind, it's meditation.
True.
What I want to tell you, some of your listeners, if ever they're interested in meditating zenfully, it's extremely difficult to quiet our minds. Okay. Mm. We've been conditioned with our phones, TV, everything, our heuristics are like firing at, you know, a million miles a second. So it's very hard to close your eyes and just think about what you're supposed to think of. Mm. I was not able to until I started Stoic meditation. And after about 2 years of journaling, I found I was able to meditate, not just zenful and quiet, but with my eyes open when I walk my son, when I walk the dog, while I'm doing yard work. So I meditate, I would say, easy, a few hours a day.
Really? That much? So it's in between?
My life is one meditation, yeah.
Yeah. let's dive into your book, if you don't mind. Sure. So one of the titles of your book is The Philosopher's King.
Yes.
And so can you tell us a lot about it? What you mean by that?
So philosopher king, it's a term I stole from Seneca on his work on providence, I think. Basically, here's the theory. If one is able to think rationally all the time, right? Not rationalize, but think rationally. Then we would presumably never make mistakes, never feel guilty, never feel like we don't belong, never feel helpless, because you're always going to be doing, you know, math and physics in your head, ones and zeros. That's what we want to aim for. Okay, that's how we want to live. And that's why we work so hard to constantly meditate, constantly think rationally, and constantly challenge our quote-unquote reality.
Okay. So what about the emotions then? Because we all have emotions.
Right.
So what do you do with them? Because they're part of our lives, and they're important as well.
That's a very good point. And here's the reason why Stoicism has become my number one philosophy. Mm-hmm. It's this precise question. It's because, Buddhism treats emotions like water off a duck's back. You don't care, you let it go, right? Mm-hmm. I can't do that. I have Mediterranean blood in me. I'm very fiery. I can't even say I used to be. I still, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, God forbid my favorite football team loses, you know, my family knows not to talk to me for a night. So as Stoics, we recognize that the real us, which is this consciousness, this rational mind, the spirit, whatever you want to call it, this part of us, this faculty, this capacity that can think intelligently, lives inside this monkey body, essentially what it is, right? We're primitive. Monkey, a prominently hairless monkey. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have these primitive instincts, right? Whether you want to call it the id and the ego, whether you want to call it the limbic system, the lizard, whatever. We exist in these fallible primitive bodies. So we will always make fallible primitive mistakes. Mm. One of which will be to make decisions based on emotions that the body generates.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the body will always generate emotions because we see them as a survival mechanism that is no longer necessary in today's society. So how do you deal with emotions? By accepting them, by recognizing them, and then by meditating on why you feel that way. What part of that why is a real threat, concern, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then how do you deal with it?
Yeah. So if you can deal with your emotions like this, then you are a philosopher king.
If you can deal with your emotions like this all the time, you're a philosopher king.
Okay. So another important thing you mention in your book is the question we all like to answer. So what's the purpose of life? Mm-hmm. So what's the answer, Anderson?
The answer depends on who you ask. My answer is going to be, the answer is in your own mind and only in your own mind.
Mm.
In my book, don't give the answers. Because if we think of this logically, we're 7.6 billion. Have we reached 8 billion yet? 7.8 billion. Different countries, different religions, different walks of life, different education, different whatever. So we cannot all possibly, right, have the same kind of, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm. But what you mentioned in your book is that everybody wants to be free.
Right.
So that's the ultimate goal?
So everybody wants to be free. Is that the ultimate goal? Sure. And if I go to ancient Greece, the Epicureans were all about that. They were all about just having fun, right? Enjoy life, live in a commune, take care of your community, and then just enjoy it as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
For Stoics, we find, let me take a pause there. Before I tell you where the Stoics find the purpose of life, let me finish on what the purpose of life
is.
So, what I do in my books is I don't give the answer of what it is, because it's impossible to have one for everyone.
No.
I give steps to help the reader figure out what it is for themselves. And I remind the reader that no one can give you better advice than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Let me rephrase that. No one has the capacity to give yourself better advice than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I help the reader to try and tap into that rational mind. I have about 12, 16 steps in there to also answer questions, to help the reader figure it out for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, a purpose of life is also, our lives are fairly, they're both short and long, depending on how you look at it. So it changes depending on whether you're a child, a parent, an executive, whatever. The final point on this question for Stoics, what's the purpose of life? Simple. Work towards the betterment of humanity.
Mm.
That's our timeline. It's not my lifetime. It's our species' lifetime.
Yeah.
And that's why, at the beginning, you mentioned I do other than my books, all my work is free. I don't put any ads in anything. I just want to get it out there. If it helps one more person, then I did my job. And this is my purpose in life.
Yeah, nice. So you use Stoicism and in combination with Buddha teaching.
Yes.
And can you tell me more about Buddha teaching and what way does this influence you?
Sure. So Buddhism is a religion, okay? Mm-hmm. And as a Stoic, I'm anti-theist. Okay. Anti-theist means I don't necessarily believe that organized religion brings value to society.
Mm.
Okay. I'm not against religion or spirituality, but I question organized religion.
Mm.
So Buddhism is an organized religion. If Buddha himself saw that what Buddhism is today, I think he'd be appalled. Okay. Because in his text that I've read, at least, he's very much against organized religion. Anyways. The story of Buddha, in 30 seconds, if I can, for your listeners who may not know this, he was a prince, had a great life, very cushy, left the palace one day because, he wanted to find out the meaning of life or whatever. He saw the people suffering outside. He said, why is there suffering? Sat under a tree to figure it out. And I'm really summarizing the story here. after meditating on it, he figured out that suffering comes from wanting. It's internal. Suffering comes from, it's in our head. And there's a huge overlap with Stoicism there, right? We say in Stoicism, everything external doesn't matter. So what's external? Everything outside of my head, right? Mm-hmm. We go back to René Descartes. I think, therefore I am. That's the only thing we're sure of. Mm-hmm. Forget everything else. Let's focus on that. Buddhism, very much the same one. Focus on internal mind, wants, yes. desires. Mm. And if you can control yourself, then you control the world.
Yeah. So to come back to the point of the philosopher King, is it a goal to have a good time regardless of where you are and what's happening around you? And how can you train yourself in this?
Right. Great question. And I have in my preface on page 2, I give a definition of happiness. I say in today's colloquial language, happiness has two meanings. One is, you know, when we're happy, we have a nice meal, we're happy, you know, mm-hmm. our favorite show is on, we're happy. The second definition of happiness is having equanimity because you don't feel any consternation. We're not too like nervous. We're not too happy. We're not too sad. We're okay. That's when we're at our best. That definition of happiness is what we're after. That definition of happiness is where a philosopher king would be theoretically all the time. Mm-hmm. We know we cannot be a philosopher king. We know that's impossible. So as a Stoic, our goal is to maximize how often we can be there in any given day.
Mm. Yeah, because if we can't be happy all the time, we can't be free of fear all the time. That's because, right. Well, life is ups and downs, and without the down, we don't have an up. So is it a goal to be as harmonious as you can be?
Yeah, equanimity, tranquility, to live in harmony with your surroundings. If you don't care about externals, you don't care about what's happening around us, you're only focused on what you can do, right? So I look down south. I think everybody knows what's been happening in the States over the past few years. Mm-hmm. So I talk to my American friends sometimes and they tell me, like, how could you possibly be happy? How could you possibly find peace when all this crap is happening around us? Excuse me for lack of better words. You know, what, political, economic, social, pandemic, like there's just so much happening. And what I remind them is step one, lesson one of Stoicism, right? All of that, it's not in your head. Mm. None of that can go inside your squishy bits that we call the brain, move levers, and make you do decisions. Mm-hmm. You make the decision at the end. And if you are in charge of your decisions, well, then happiness is a guarantee if you just focus on that, right? Mm. Instead of trying to chase the externals.
Yeah. So is it to try to pursue tranquility in that sense?
I'll have to be very careful on this one. So we, as Stoics, we experience tranquility and we experience joy and we experience happiness, which is great. But these are happy accidents. Because we don't do what we do for that. Okay, I don't put my stuff out there to be like, hey, I got a message, yay, someone. Not at all. We do what we do. Like I tell my kids, why do we do the right thing? Because it's the right thing to do, period. One of my favorite quotes of Marcus Aurelius is just that. If it's good, do it. If it's not good, don't do it, period, right? So the joy you get out of things, out of people telling you these great stories, out of seeing the joy in people's, you know, one of my favorite things to do is to do someone a nice favor, but not let them see it. However, I do like observing from a distance. So I'll do, you know, anything, like leave something. And then they get so happy, like, wow, I can't believe this worked out for me. They'll look around, like, stupid things, like paying for a parking spot, you know, little things. Yeah. And to see their joy, even though I'm not getting thanked for it, brings me so much joy. Mm. So, yeah, we feel joy and happiness, but it's a consequence.
So it's doing good is the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there was another thing that you write about in your book, and there was a little bit confrontational, and because you were saying, well, consider yourself in the universe, release all the events that took place in history, mm-hmm. and you are an insignificant part of the universe, and we are the least successful animals, destructive, causing death and distinctions. So, yeah, it's true, partly. But what's the reason why you write things down like this?
Well, I wrote it down that way. That particular section talks about... No, let me back up. Let me just talk about the books in general. So, or even Stoicism in general. If you look at my weekly exercises, the books, the whatever, you'll notice that the tone always goes from, do this, this is going to help you be virtuous. Mm-hmm. And then next week or a chapter later, I'll go the other way and say, do the opposite. That'll bring you virtue. Mm-hmm. The point of my books, and I write this in the preface of all of my books, my goal is to provoke the right questions in the reader. Mm-hmm. And to provoke the right questions in the reader, I have to I'm not asking them questions, but I have to confront the reader with uncomfortable realities. And it is an uncomfortable reality that we are, physically speaking, an insignificant part of the visible known universe. Mm-hmm. We can't contest this, right? Even if we believe, you know, it was all created 6,000 years ago, or whatever, we can still see the universe is quite large and with such a tiny, tiny speck, right? So these are things we can agree on, regardless of whatever background we come from. Mm. And then we can go from there, what decision we want to make with it. But, time, space, these things, that chapter was to, those three chapters, actually, I tried to build as much anxiety in the reader as possible, because that's the starting point. I know we're running short on time here, but nihilism is a necessary first step to embark on ancient Hellenic philosophies. And our older cousins, if we ever do a follow-up, I can give a deeper dive on this, but basically it goes nihilism, cynicism, stoicism. So we have to first recognize that we're just stardust. And then we recognize that, well, you know, I can have fun or I can help people, which also feels good. And then we make a decision on what do I do with my time? Because, I know I'm going to die. What do? I'm here anyways. I got to do something.
Mm. Yeah, one of the things that really hit me when I listened to your book was the part that you talk about TikTok. And that's those two words just really resonated with me because, I used those two words already. When something happened that I really didn't like, and I was starting to really think about it in a negative way. So then I thought, TikTok. So it really reminded me.
I love
it. Yeah, it really reminded me of the time we have on this planet, or I have, or we all have, but to remember myself, I want to realize that time is precious. So the whole TikTok really is a good tip. Thank you.
So what we Stoics follow is memento mori.
Yeah.
Right. TikTok is my version of memento mori for us normal people, right?
Yep.
Because that resonates with us. We know time is money. Time is important. Time. So.
Mm. Yeah. So one of the tips you give your readers is train yourself to view the world. So I think the thing we just talked about consider yourself just like somebody who's pretty tiny in the whole universe. Is that also an example what you mean by train yourself to view the world? So view things in an objective manner as well?
Yeah. The idea behind that one is, especially in the Western world, you know, we're so egotistical. It's all about us. Like, why do we get so upset on the road? because other people are in our way. Right? Get out of the way and I won't be so angry. Mm. So, you know, the reader, someone who's trying to get into this, I went through the same thing. You have to switch. And this is a very hard thing to do. You have to switch from I'm the most important thing in the world to I participate in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're more connected with some, with other people. So, but you also talk about try to look at the world through different pairs of eyes. So do you have someone specific in mind if you talk about different pairs of eyes? You sometimes try to look through the eyes of Marcus Aurelius, for example.
There's two questions. So do I look through the eyes of Marcus Aurelius? Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the same way a carpenter needs a ruler to draw a straight line, we need someone who is of a higher moral authority to emulate, kind of like a child with their parent, like, you know, and until you can surpass them, they're a good bar and then the next person, whatever. But on that one, what I'm more referring to is, again, because we're so self-centered and egotistical, we tend to get very defensive. One of the reasons why we don't like telling the truth, right? As soon as we're confronted with anything, even if we're wrong, and we know we're wrong, what do? I didn't do that. So one of the reasons why there, I believe, there's so, like, not so much conflict, but the reason why conflicts are being escalated so much in everything from just conversations by the water cooler to, you know, riots and what have you, is because people just want to scream their point without thinking of the other side. And, you know, and later on, what I'm telling the reader is, you know your point. You don't have to repeat it.
No.
Try to hear the other point, because there's a reason they think that. There's a reason they think that.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. So, so you just showed me the tattoo on your arm.
Yeah.
That's a great one. And, now one last thing I would like to ask you about, the subject. A lot of people don't really, like to talk about or think about is death.
Yes.
That's an important, subject. Stoics like to talk about, maybe, I don't know, but talk about. So small mental exercises is, for example, to think you're going to die at the end of the month. And I told some people about this exercise, and there are a lot of people who really look at me quite strangely and say, well, I really don't like thinking about my death. But it's a real stoic exercise. And it really has a point. So can you explain us what's the point of thinking about your death a little bit more than we like to?
Sure. So memento mori is a key precept that our Stoics use. It means remember death. And we don't talk about death so much because we have a sixth sense of humor. There's a reason behind it. Two reasons. One is easy one. First, stop fearing your death. Okay. Let's look back at when this philosophy started. Ancient Greece, 2,500 years ago, you could literally have a new ruler come in and take over your city state next week. You know, people are dying from plagues, earthquakes, like the human population is growing to a point where now there's so much conflict and pain and suffering and death. People are trying to make sense of this. So this is when these ancient Hellenic philosophies came to be. So with that context in mind, it explains why they would talk about, it's okay, you're going to die. It's okay, you're going to die. If there's one thing we know for sure, is that we're going to die. Not death and taxes. If Donald Trump taught us anything, taxes are not for sure. Death is for sure. So why fear something that we know is for certain? Why be uncomfortable about it? It just seems silly. Yep. Why would we fear something we know for sure will happen? So that's important. The second reason why we use it, and I believe today it's the more important reason, is because it's a reminder of the preciousness of our time. It is a constant, and this is why, you know, I showed you the tattoo on the inside of my right arm, so I see it as I do anything and everything. because I'm right-handed. We remind ourselves of that because we want to make sure my conversation with you right now, Fife, okay? It might be my last conversation with you. It might be my last conversation ever. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't come to this interview, you know, just, I'm not taking a phone call from the backyard. I'm not, you know, I prepared, I had my notebook, I had my mug of tea because it's important to me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And if we go back to the beginning of the interview, I was saying, I meditate almost all the time because I'm trying to make rational decisions all the time, right? I'm because I'm aware that I might not have a chance to do this tomorrow.
Yeah,
I might not have a chance to do this next year.
Mm.
I go all out for Christmas parties. I love Christmas. And my friends tell me, like, why you spend so much money on these parties? I say, how many Christmas parties do I have left where I can host and have all my loved ones here? You know, we have like 60 people come to our house. How many more times can I do this? You know, I'm going to die. I'm going to get older and frail. I might not have the financial capacity to do so. So all of these things I don't avoid.
No.
Because if you avoid it, it's stuck in the back of your head and then it makes you uncomfortable.
Mm. Well, it makes me think of one of the things that Stoics say is that future holds a script for you. That's, well, you're going to die. You don't know why, when, but it's already written down. Or what do they mean by that?
Yeah, it's like what we were talking about just before. It for sure will happen.
Yeah.
So think about this. Like, let's think about something else that will for sure happen. The sun is going to rise tomorrow, okay? Because if the planet stops turning, all of a sudden we got bigger problems. So assuming the planet keeps turning, the sun will come up tomorrow morning for sure. So why should we spend the night being afraid the sun's not going to come up?
Mm.
See what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it has to do with nature, things that happen within nature. But one of the other things they say, every fault that is committed is not your fault. So it seems that we can't judge someone if he or she does something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a little bit difficult to accept, I think.
It is.
So where are our responsibilities then?
Oh, man, this is a tough one. I'm going to give you a very high-level answer. It's going to trigger some people and upset some people. So I will start with, I'll go through the theory.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there are questions, maybe we can have another episode on this because it is quite controversial and we can't cover every topic here.
Mm-mm.
So in philosophy, you know, there's different divides. And one of these ongoing divides is determinism versus free will, right?
Mm-hmm.
And determinism versus free will, just very quickly, is free will, as the name dictates, you know, we believe that we're allowed to make free choices. It's up to us whether we, you know, whether I pick up this pen and drop it. It's entirely up to me.
Mm-hmm.
Determinism is more everything is cause and consequence, happens for a reason. And if you were to follow the cause and consequence back to the Big Bang, it's all kind of premeditated.
Okay. Yep.
There are, you know, huge proponents on one side, huge proponents on the other side. We have names like Plato and Aristotle that are on the opposite side of this, right? So heavy hitters.
Mm-hmm.
And then comes us Stoics. And our answer to this pisses everybody off. We say, you're both right. Okay. So we are what you call compatibilists. Okay. We believe in both determinism and free will. And again, I'm trying to go through this really fast, so it's very high level. I know there's some psychology majors out there that are like, this is wrong. Just bear with me. Summary. We say, okay, determinism makes sense. We believe in the scientific method. Albert Einstein was a big proponent of the of determinism as well. There's a famous quote from Planck, you know, the scientific method wouldn't exist without some type of belief in determinism. There is cause and consequence in events, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we say, okay, it makes sense. So there is a script. However, I don't know that script. I don't see the future of that script.
No. Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the only machine that can read that script is the universe itself. So any machine that can see in the future would necessarily have to be bigger than the universe.
Mm.
Okay. Then there's the other side, free will. And this is where people get triggered because, yes, we have free will. Yes, I can pick up a pen and choose to drop it. But let's think of a grazing cow. Okay. Mm. A cow can choose to walk, and it can choose to put one hoof in front of the other and walk this way and that. And so when it's hungry and the herd goes grazing, the cow will follow the herd and graze because it wants to, right? It has free will. It chooses to put one hoof in front of the other to go that way. However, think about this. This is a genetically programmed animal over generations to follow the herd because, you know, as cows ran off and went off into the hills, those ones disappeared. The ones that were left with the herd, that followed the herd, propagated, et cetera, et cetera. So does that cow really have free will? Right? It's a silly mental exercise, but it does kind of plant the seed with the reader. And again, my point is not to give all the answers, but to provoke the right questions.
Yeah, to think about it. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So if your listeners, you know, I would say just look into the different, think about the difference in determinism and free will. And, you know, if you're interested, the Stoic answer is, yeah, we believe in both.
So what's your advice to which book is best for people to read?
One book.
Except your books, of course.
Of course. One book, that's hard. If I can choose two, I'm going to say War and Peace by Leo Tolstoy and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought it was a really clever book. War and Peace by Leo Tolstoy, because Leo Tolstoy is a very, very philosophical writer. He has a lot of introspective look into the human condition. It's a fantastic book. It's a classic. There's a reason they're on all the lists. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. In my entire library, there's no other book that's made me laugh as hard. So I would recommend it to everyone.
Oh, great. Thank you. So what's your plan? Do you have plans set up to write another book or whatever?
I'd like to. So right now I'm finishing season 3 of the podcast series. So what I've been doing for the past 3 years is write a book, release a season of podcast series, write a book, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm doing season 3. And then I would like to start a book, or I kind of started already, a book on journaling, entirely on journaling and Stoic meditation. People, you'd be surprised how much information there is about journaling. It's as simple as writing on a piece of paper, but it can also be very complex and the most powerful tool you can use to see inside your own mind. So,
True. It's a very rich, rich tool, but also quite difficult to use because you really have to find your own personal style and personal method within. So I can really imagine that you can write a book about it. And your own podcast is called Stoicism for a Better Life.
That's right.
So there we can find your podcast. And where do we find your other books?
You can find my books on Amazon, Google, Barnes & Noble, iTunes, Audible, Kobo, you name it, your local bookstore.
Everywhere. We can find you everywhere.
For everything else that's free, I release weekly articles. I have discussion groups on Reddit. I release podcast episodes, and then I release random articles of interesting topics. You can find all of it at stoicismforabetterlife.com. All free, no ads, no pop-ups. If you want to sign up for the newsletter, you have to go to a page to sign up. So just go check it out. If it doesn't, move on.
You're amazing active. Because it's a side project. Because you're an accountant. Unbelievable. Yeah.
I shared this on my podcast. I quite literally spend every free minute I have doing this work for no pay, for no monetary pay. But it is what brings me joy and purpose in life. So I'll keep doing it as long as I keep getting just one person tell me, hey, it really helped.
Yeah, well, it helped us. It helped me, I can say. So I want to thank you a lot for this interview. And wish you all the best with everything. all the activities, and we can find you on your own website and through all your books. So I really recommend my listeners to do something with it. And so thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was great. And for your listeners, I respond to everyone. Reach out on social media if you want. If you have questions, I can point you in the right direction. And hey, if you ever want to do a follow-up on a deeper dive on something, let me know.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for joining me today. If you'd like to hear more about me and the Max, go to themax.partners and don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss an episode.